Welcome back, everyone. Today we're going to have a look at a paper about an increasingly important topic, that is to say, a meta-analysis of small bites versus large bites closure for midline abdominal incisions. After that, I'll be talking about repeated measures on ANOVA with some examples using JAMOVI. I'll leave you to it.
I'm Constantine, and I'm presenting this paper with one of my colleagues in PINDAS, Obafemi, who is an ST5 in upper GI. The topic I've seen is quite interesting because there's been debates here and there, people enforcing you to do, and then the evidence are there, but it doesn't seem to be adopted. So we're looking at this systematic review today with trial sequential analysis of randomized control trial on this topic. It was published by Al-Rashidi et al. In the World Journal of Surgery, and that was this May. Midline laparotomy, we all know, is a very common technique for assessing the intra-abdominal cavity for both elective and emergency operations. In the US, this is reported to be about 4 to 5 million in a year. In the UK, I couldn't get the data I wanted to compare, but from the NILAS study, about 30 to 50,000 laparotomies emergencies are done yearly in the UK. It's associated with comorbidities, the significant ones. Surgical site infections, ventral incisional hernia, and burst abdomen. The ventral incisional hernia is about 10% in the reports. Therefore, choosing an optimal closure is essential, as this has been shown to reduce some of these complications. Large bite technique is the standard we know, the traditional closure of the abdomen, where you take 1 cm from the edge of the wound and then 1 cm bites in between sutures. This has been reported in studies to be uneven in terms of tension distribution, leading to point focal ischemia and necrosis, increased surgical site infection, and eventual ventral incisional hernias. Evidence suggests also that small bites reduces some of these complications, and small bites is taking a 5 millimeter suture bite from the edges of the wound and then 5 millimeter in between the sutures with a smaller suture. Some people use two, or the others use all strength suture, and this various studies has looked into these sutures, but the recommendation is to use a smaller long-term absorbable sutures. Despite the available evidence that small bites helps to reduce some of this complication, it is not being adopted, and this might be due to the evidence may not be robust, there may be conflicting findings in the evidence, and maybe just reluctance to change from traditional practice. I'll hand over to Femi to discuss the aim and the method of the study.
The authors of this systematic review try to evaluate and compare small bites versus large bites for closure of midline abdominal incisions. The population they looked at were people who were admitted to have midline incisions for their laparotomy. The intervention was small bites, which is the 5 millimeter tissue bites, and comparator was 1 centimeter bites, which is the conventional bites. The outcome they looked at primarily was the rate of formation of ventral incisional hernia at 1 year. And secondary outcomes that were looked at were surgical site infections, length of stay, all-cause mortality, anastomotic leak, burst abdomen, and ileus. The included studies were randomized controlled trials. The authors did a systematic review and meta-analysis. They searched relevant databases up to December 2024, Covidence tool was used for article screening and selection. They pre-registered these on their study on Prospero, and they excluded studies that were not published in English, book chapters, reviews, comments, letters to editors, guidelines, and non-human and in vitro experiments. They use the grading of recommendations, assessments, development, and evaluation to assess the level of their certainty of evidence. And analysis was done using R version 4.3. The results from the articles were combined using the risk ratio for dichotomous outcomes and mean difference for continuous outcomes. Random effects model was used when significant heterogeneity existed. They used a trial sequential analysis which was a method they used to assess the strength and reliability of their combined data. Significant level of and they did set specific statistical parameters for their analysis to be the significance level at 0.05, power at 80%, and an expected 20% reduction in risk ratio for dichotomous outcomes.
So going on to the results, this is the Prisma chart for the analysis. The number of articles they got and screened, duplicates, exclusion at the end. Seven randomized control trials were included in the study. From this, they got 2,299 participants. 1,115 were large bites, and 1,114 were patients in the small bite closure. For the risk of bias assessment, the authors assessed the risk of bias in the study and stated that only one study had significant risk of bias, and the reason for this was they could not ascertain the randomization in this study. That's the study by Milburn et al. And the other had minimum or no risk of bias. For the primary outcome, which is ventral incisional hernia at 1 year, the Forex plots we can see on centrally showed the pooled effects, the risk ratio to be 0.46 at 95% confidence interval. This is statistically significant, and this could be interpreted to mean that about 44% of those in the large bite or 44% more patients are likely to have ventral incisional hernia at 1 year in the large bite closure. The other way to look at it is to say that the patients in the small bite are 0.46 times less likely to have ventral incisional hernia at 1 year. So the authors did trial sequential analysis to ascertain the strength of this finding for the ventral incisional hernia. This is a new graph to me. I had to look it up to understand it. So the middle part, for those that may be seeing it for the first time, for every other person can follow through. The middle part is like the usual boundary that is set for statistically significant. Then the two lines above in red shows the trial sequential monitoring boundary. And looking at any study, if the Z curve statistics crosses the two lines, it simply means whatever that is being tested on is statistically significant. So from the method, they set their significance to be 0.05 at 80% power, and assumed 20% reduction in ventral incisional hernia. And when it was plotted on this trial sequential analysis, the total participants required to power the study is about 7,000. That is that area. It's quite small, on 7,139 patients, which in this study, the participant is 2,299. Looking at the curve itself, it's statistically significant, the results, but what it means is that if further trials, randomized control trials, are done to meet this number of participants, the overall outcome might not be what it is now. But with the number of participants in the study, it is statistically significant that small bite closure reduces the risk of ventral incisional hernia. Going to the secondary outcomes, the surgical site infection in the study is one of the secondary outcomes, and the forex plot here also shows that small bites reduces the risk of surgical site infection, and the risk ratio for this is 0.73 at 95% confidence interval. You could interpret this to mean that those in the large bite are 27% more likely to get surgical site infection compared to the small bite, or that the small bite group are 0.73 times likely to have surgical site infection compared to the large bite group. For the length of hospital stay, which is another outcome they looked at, small bites also led to shorter length of hospital stay. And the mean difference for this is minus 1.03, which could be interpreted that on average, those patients that had the small closure likely to go home a day before those that had the large bite closure. And for the rest of the secondary outcomes that were assessed, which include all-cause mortality, burst abdomen, anastomotic leak, ileus, there was no statistical significant difference between the large bites and the small bites group. They did a subgroup analysis to look at the outcome of ventral hernia and surgical site infection based on the nature of the operation, if it was emergency or elective operations. And what they found was that those that had the elective operation are more likely to have ventral surgical site infection, more likely to have ventral incisional hernia compared to those that had emergency operation. This is not what we would expect usually, but that is what the statistics have shown. And for the surgical site infection, they did not see any difference. There was no statistical difference between the two arms of the study. I'll hand over to Femi to.
Thanks, Constantine. The authors self-reported some limitations. They did note that they included only studies published in English, and as such, they did feel that the part of the world where studies are not in English would may probably not be able to generalize their outcomes. Again, heterogeneity in study populations, outcome definitions, and variations in follow-up duration could also limit interpretation of this data, because some of the randomized control trials actually looked at outcome at 6 months, and they tried to analyze their reports differently, but again, this would affect our interpretation of this data. Shortage of standardized diagnostic protocols for complications. Some people diagnose their hernias based on image findings, others was clinical analysis. And again, some surgical site infections that were interpreted were reported differently across different studies. Variability in the BMI of included population. There was one of the studies which actually set a limit of BMI of 25, and as such, they actually excluded people who had BMI greater than 25. Again, this could skew the interpretation and generalizability of this data. There were also variations in surgical techniques, the nature of the sutures used, the sizes of needles, the skills of the surgeons, and as such, this will provide limitations. We also noted that the follow-up across the study for their primary outcome was for follow-up in 1 year or outcome at 1 year. And it's noted that incisional hernias do continue to become a risk. There's a risk of having incisional hernias further down the line. So perhaps a longer follow-up may help to see how well we can apply this data. In conclusion, they did conclude that small bite suture technique for facial closure significantly reduced the incidence of ventral incisional hernias and surgical site infection compared to large bites technique. And additionally, they also found shorter length of stay and without necessarily affecting the overall mortality. Technically, we did think that they used appropriate statistical methods, and clinically, it did also feel like this result is potentially useful to change clinical practice across board. However, it's important to also note that technically, the fact that they have the authors of the primary studies haven't standardized their measuring outcome is not particularly a good thing for interpretation of this data. And some people have also raised well, the cost effectiveness of using small bites, perhaps that's not an issue in well-resourced settings, but again, prolonged closure time, as we would know, the time pressure at the end of operations may discourage people from this intervention. Thank you very much.
As usual, a brief summary of what we discussed after the presentation of the paper. We started by touching upon the concept of heterogeneity, statistical, methodological, and clinical. And we discussed how this meta-analysis is probably affected by a degree of clinical heterogeneity as well as statistical heterogeneity. And we discussed the role of random effect and common effect models in this context and how the author uses throughout the paper. We spent a few extra minutes on the TSA chart. We ran through it again and our understanding of it. All the members of the team are relatively new to this type of statistical analysis, and we did feel that the main benefit was related to the cumulative nature of this type of method and how it can ultimately tell you when performing a further study would actually be useful and when it wouldn't be. But with the exception of this, we couldn't really pick up any major advantages in comparison to a simple forest plot. We might be looking into more depth on this for one of our next episodes. We talked about the biological plausibility behind the small bite closure and how the author explained it in this particular type of paper. And we talked about potential alternatives other than mass closure, including the near-far-far near technique. Finally, we talked about the outcome chosen, particularly incision hernia rate at 1 year, why it is relevant and how it was measured in the various studies, and how this can be affected by clinical heterogeneity. Right, I'll leave you to the teaching session. Catch you next time.
Right, so we are going to carry on our lovely journey through statistical tests and how to guide. As always, we start with a bit of disclaimers. I'm not a statistician or an expert in stat software, but I like to kind of play with both and read and learn about them. Quick run through what we've done so far. We talked about assumptions. We hammered now 15 million times on normality and stochasticity, and we are going to hammer more on those. We talked about students T, ANOVA, Welch's ANOVA, Choué ANOVA, per samples T tests, and how to run them. And today we're going to go a little bit further, but we run a very quick recap of what we've done so far using a similar method compared to what we did last time. So let's go back to our dystopic future where students are running riots because the cost of studying has increased exponentially and residents, doctors, are underpaid and undervalued. So, as we said last time, in this fictional world, we have two characters. One we'll call Matt and the other one we'll call N1, and they've started a lovely cannabis business to make up for their student debt and survive through their weekly shopping. So, let's recap very quickly. If you remember, N1 was running a plantation of cannabis, and he had planted two rows at two different temperatures. And Maddie was asking him how many grams did each plant give you to determine whether the temperature was actually making a difference. So, do you remember, Maddie, what test did we say we're going to use here?
I think we said we'd use students' t test.
Yeah, that's correct. So we got two samples, the two sort of different plantations, and two sets of continuous data, which is the grams that each plant gave us. So we could run a student see if the data is normally distributed, as you were reminding and one last time. And do you remember what assumptions we were talking about?
Normality and stochasticity before running a student T, we need to make sure the data is normally distributed and the variances are not massively different.
Correct, yes. If obviously if the data is not normally distributed and the variances are very different, we cannot run this type of test. Let's quickly move on. If you remember, last time N1 suddenly had a memory of planting a further row at a different temperature. So now we've got three different temperatures. What test should we run here with three samples?
So now he's got three samples, he should run an ANOVA.
Yeah, that's correct. Three samples, three continuous sets of data. And that's what we would do. And we also talked about Welch ANOVA as well, which is what you do when the variances are different. If you remember, N1 also decided to try some different types of fertilizers on his different temperature plants. So we now have three rows using different temperatures and different fertilizers. So what test should we run?
A two-way ANOVA.
Yeah, that's correct. So we are looking at two variables in this particular instance. We then wrapped up last time with a final question, which was N1 had noticed that the plant looked a bit floppy, so decided to give him a little bit of fizzy water. And he counted the leaves before giving the fizzy water and after giving the fizzy water. And the question is, has the fizzy water made any different? So in this case, we are talking about paired sample. Matt, do you remember what other test we said we were going to run here?
That would be a paired t-test.
Yeah, that's correct. So an intervention is performed and the data is collected again on the same sample. And we'll go through what paired samples are again, just to reinforce the concept. Now, let's add a little bit more. Obviously, N1 woke up the following morning and realized that the plants actually responded pretty well to the fizzy water. And he thought, well, I should give him a little bit more. But unfortunately, he picked up a lemonade instead. So what scenario are we now in, Maddie?
So the samples are still paired, but there's three interventions and data is collected at three different time points. So I think a repeated measures ANOVA should be what N1 needs.
Correct, absolutely correct. So we're going to talk about repeated measures, ANOVA. But since you are very clever, you also remind him that he's got to check for sphericity. What the heck is sphericity? Well, it's a concept I've recently encountered myself. So we'll dig into it together and we'll figure it out. So before we move on to the actual lecture, let's see where we are in our map. So we're still looking at continuous data. We're still looking at data that is normally distributed, and we are now digging a little bit more into ANOVA. And again, to demonstrate, we're going to use Jamovi. Now, ANOVA is, as you probably remember from the last two lectures, a product of the statistical genius of Mr. Fisher. Now, Fisher had published a number of papers on statistical methods when he was working at the Rothamsted Experimental Station. And those studies are called studies on crop variations, and I think there's five of them. Allegedly, they're all enlightening documents. I can't encourage you to read them on one because I think that probably be a bit too much. But certainly, having a look at how Fisher's contribution looking at crops changed the way we do medicine today is fascinating. And he probably doesn't get enough credit for what he did to change the way we do what we do in research. So moving on. When we were talking about the paired sample t-test, we talked about paired data. And as we said, paired data is a set of data where each data point in one group has a corresponding and meaningfully connected data point in the other group. And the most common scenario that you encounter in medicine is I've got a patient with high blood pressure, I'm going to give him some treatment, and then I'm going to measure the blood pressure again. So each patient has got a blood pressure before and after having had treatment. Now, when we go into repeated samples ANOVA, we're still talking about paired data, but nothing stops us from measuring it at the start, after the first treatment, and after another set of treatment, potentially even doing cumulative treatments, so giving them a further medication, such as, I don't know, amlodipine and then an ACE inhibitor. I don't even know if you do that nowadays because I've not done blood pressure management in ages, but that's just to give you an example. So again, you measure the baseline, you do something, you measure again, then you do something again, and you measure again. So you end up with basically three pots of data which are all linked to each other. Let's look at the assumptions that we need to take into account when we run a repeated sample ANOVA. The first one is always normality. Normality, normality, and then normality again. Remember to always check that, and we looked at how to do that a few lectures ago. Obviously, it assumes that samples are paired, otherwise we wouldn't use this technique. And the sample should be big enough for, sort of this result to be representative. And we discussed how big the sample should be is rather open to interpretation. We did that a few lectures ago. Now, let's talk about assumption number four, also called sphericity. Now, before we actually explain what sphericity is, I need to tell you a couple of things about levels and scores. Now, when we run a repeated measures ANOVA, we talk about level. A level is a point when the measure is taken. In let's talk about blood pressure. It's the blood pressure at baseline. Baseline is one level. Then we give the meds. We measure 3 months on the line. So 3 months on the line is another level. And then 3 months on the line again, and that's another level. So we've got level one, level two, level three. And then we talk about scores. Scores are the values that are recorded for that particular subject at that particular time point. So for level one, patient Jack has got a blood pressure, which is his score at that point. At level two, Jack has got a different blood pressure, which is his score at that particular point, and so on. I hope it makes sense so far. Now, when we talk about sphericity, we need to look at the difference between scores, so in this case, the value of the blood pressure, between the different levels. So if we measure a blood pressure at time point one, or level one, as it is highlighted here, and then we measure at level two, and then at level three, we then have to calculate the difference between the score at time point one and the score at time point two. The score at time point two and the score at time point three, and the score at time point one and the score at time point three. So the difference between any two levels and the variance between the different levels for this difference that we calculated has to be constant, or at the very least, not dramatically different. And there is a specific test that you can run to check that that is the case. And Jamovi allows you to run that test. I hope it makes sense, but we'll have a look at a pragmatic example. So going back to my lovely dissertation, if you remember, and it's probably now imprinted in your brain as much as it is in mine, I did collect data about papers that were advertised on Twitter by a number of publishing journals. And for the purpose of this particular example, let's assume that those papers were treated first using simple text, then using a picture, and then using a visual abstract. Now, this was done sequentially. So basically, we've got the same papers, and we've got three different levels: text, picture, visual abstract. Let's have a go at doing it with Jamovi. Now let's go back to our lovely overall data set. So the repeated measures ANOVA is conveniently found under ANOVA, and it's actually labeled pretty well. Now, slightly more complicated than normal. You've got to actually name the levels. So for the purposes of this example, we're going to name them text. The second one is going to be named picture. And the third one is going to be named visual abstract. Okay? And then we are going to put our actual continuous numerical variables here. I conveniently pre-labeled them, so I know that this goes there, that goes there, that goes there. And there you go. As you can see, Jamovi runs the test, obviously pretty quickly. Is a computer. And as you can see, the results is statistically significant. So there is a difference between the various levels. You can also look at the between subject effects, and you can also conveniently check the assumptions. And there is, look at a sphericity test. There you go. And as you can see, this is statistically significant, which tells you that the assumption is violated. So I shouldn't have run this test. However, for the purposes of showing you how to run it, I did. Now, this is a very simplified version what I've explained to you of repeated measures ANOVA. And I cannot pretend to fully grasp the complexities of Fisher's calculations and how he designed all this. But there are many more uses for this particular type of test. And if you go online and look at the tutorial for repeated measures ANOVA on Jamovi, which the people that actually designed this software have produced, it does give you a much a broader overview of the features related to this test. But for the purposes of this brief lecture, I'm going to stop here. I hope it is reasonably clear, the purpose of the test, and a relatively simple application of it. Thank you, guys.